What's up, listeners? This is your host, Lewis. As always, I wanted to give you a quick thank you for supporting the Facebook page at Let Me Just Say This Podcast. Please continue the support. It is very much appreciated, as well as my Instagram page, Let Me Just Say This Podcast as well. Today's episode is going to feature two special guests, Keyote Howard, as usual, from Scriptly Adapted, and my boy, Lincoln Harris, a.k.a. Lamar Hawkins. We're going to be discussing the different iterations of Batman in cinema. So the Tim Burton Batman movies, the Joel Schumacher Batman movies, and then on the next episode, we're going to be dissecting the Dark Knight trilogy by Christopher Nolan. So this is going to be a very, very fun discussion. Lots of different opinions. So stay tuned and enjoy. What's up, everybody? Welcome to this edition of Let Me Just Say This. As I said on the intro, this is going to be a Batman-based discussion, the different iterations of Batman in cinema. Tim Burton's Batman movies, Joel Schumacher's Batman movies, and then on the next episode, Christopher Nolan's Batman movies, and maybe we'll even talk about Zack Snyder's version of Batman with Ben Affleck. So how you been, Lamar Hawkins, before we get into our discussion today?
I'm good, bro. I'm good, man. I'm blessed, man. I'm just doing what I gotta do, man. I'm alive another day. God is good, man. I'm happy. Got good people around me, man. I ain't complaining, man. No complaint here, man.
That's swell. That's swell. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Lamar Hawkins is actually a wrestler. You want to explain that a little bit before we go into today's topic?
I am an independent professional wrestler. So basically right now, I am a professional wrestler, but I work the indies. I'm trying to make a living off of professional wrestling. I would like to one day work for AEW or ROH or New Japan. Those are the three companies I would love to work for. And basically every weekend, I try to go out and get on shows and pay my dues and try to make myself better. But right now I'm an independent pro wrestler trying to make it big.
That's what's up, man. I wish you all the best of luck, because when you do make it, I already told you, I want front row seats.
Everybody's saying when I do, man. I hope, man. I'm just going to work hard and do what I got to do, man. That's the dream, man.
Yeah, for real. What's up, Keyote? Thank you for joining us.
What's going on, Lewis? What's going on?
This is my boy, the one and only, the famous Lamar Hawkins.
What's going
on? Keyote, what's good, man? How are you?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Chilling, man. Chilling.
Yeah, you just missed his brief spiel, how he's going to work for AEW or New Japan or ROH one day, and I'm going to be front row.
Nice. Gotcha. Is that a plus one for me? Is there a little...
Yeah. You in it, bro. You in it. No worries, man.
I got to get in there, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know something? The three of us got to get on. We got to get it in on a wrestling-based topic for sure in the near future.
Definitely, I'm down for that.
I'm down.
Yeah, so without further ado, man, recently I've been feeling very nostalgic, and I just happened to look through my Voodoo account, and, you know, they always have a free selection of good, really good movies from back in the day where, you know, you're like, oh, man, I haven't seen this film in a while, and then you start scrolling, oh, I haven't seen this one in a while. So then you start to feel a little nostalgic. Right. So seeing as how it's summer vacation and I just finished up summer school last year, I have some free time. So I see that Vudu just put the first four Batman movies on, and I'm like, you know what? I haven't seen these movies in quite some time. It's been years since I've seen Batman Returns or Batman Forever or any of them. So I go, you know what? Let me just start from the beginning and go into 1989's Batman. And then the light bulb went off. How about we make this a podcast episode? That would be so dope, because I've been wanting to talk about this kind of topic for a while. Like, I've been wanting to talk about the X-Men and Spider-Man and all that stuff, but Batman is the one who has seen the most changes in the last 30 years. Wouldn't you guys say so?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So let's start with 1989's Batman. Tim Burton, first of all, he had already made films like Beetlejuice and Pee-wee's Big Adventure before adapting The Dark Knight for mm-hmm. film. So my impression of the movie, like my first memories of the film are weird, because I actually saw Batman Returns before I saw this one, because this was This came out in 89, so obviously, right. You know, we were babies. You guys were all born, we were all born the same year, right?
Right. 85. I was April 29th, 89. So when that movie came out, it was like, what, June? So I was like 3 months old almost back then. So, of course, I didn't remember nothing.
Right. How about you, Keyote?
I'm 85. So.
Okay. So. Yeah,
so I wouldn't remember. I didn't see it when it first came out. But I did see it a little while after, like I would say like the 90s. I almost think, Lewis, I might agree with you. I might have seen Returns before this one. I think that might have happened, where I might have seen Batman Returns before this, but before the original.
The crazy part is, go ahead.
That doesn't surprise. Yeah, no, my bad. That doesn't surprise me. A lot of people that were born around that time of the release probably saw Batman Returns first. But yeah, go ahead, Lincoln.
Nah, the crazy part is I remember having the Batman Returns toys, the McDonald's toys.
Yeah,
like I remember having a Catwoman, like she had her own mobile, then the Batmobile and stuff.
Yo,
and the King of the Happy Meal. But the funny part is, like, I seen the Batman movie before I seen the Batman Returns movie, and I actually remember the Batman movie. I swear I won't forget this. I was like maybe in first grade, and my mom was going out, but she told me I could watch TV in a room, and she pointed something out that was on HBO, like HBO. Back then, I had like a guide, and it was like a mini screen with the guy showing what movies were gonna come on next. Yeah. And I remember she pointed out to Batman, and I seen the Joker, and I was like, "Oh wow, this and that!" Like 5 or 6, and I'd never seen that Batman before. But I remember watching. That's how I first watched Batman on HBO. My mother went out, and she told me I could watch Batman in her room.
Mm. Wow, that's a great story, great memory.
That is.
Yeah.
Well, if these first couple of minutes prove anything, it's that we're all old.
Right. Basically.
We're talking about HBO guides.
Right. Because I remember how excited I was because we had no cable in the living room or in my room. It was only cable in my mom's room. So I was dumb hype.
Yeah, I can imagine. This is a film that was a pretty big deal because this was the first. Well, okay, let's backtrack a little bit. So when you think of the main DC superheroes, you're always going to think of Superman and Batman. Right. So prior to this, we had already had a full decade of Superman films. Mm-hmm. And Batman had only been done in a much more campy way with the Adam West Batman TV show and movie and all that stuff. And that was just very, you know, it was more of a caricature than anything else. Yeah. But this was actually the first real representation of what the Dark Knight character should be like.
Right.
So, yeah, and you get that sense as soon as the film starts when Batman is fighting off the crooks. And, boy, I got to tell you, when I'm looking at that Batman suit, that shit is very dated.
It is.
It looks – don't get me wrong. It still looks cool, and it looks cool for 1989, but it looks very dated, man. I'm like –
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's one of my favorites, man. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that a little later when we talk about Batman Returns. What do you think, Keyote, about the costume?
The costume, you're right, but it is the one costume out of all the films that I remember the most. So it's the most iconic, and it stands.
Yep.
To me, it stands for Batman. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like it's the first thing for anybody in our age range. If we think Batman, we think that suit and the old school Batmobile.
Exactly.
At least that I would think of.
Oh yeah.
Right. So you know, it's a classic. It is dated though. I mean, it's 2019. This was 1989. Right.
1989. Yeah, it's 30 years ago. Bro.
Yeah, we've gotten some variations. So you know, it is different.
Right.
Yeah. It was. Exactly. It was. But it felt. I can imagine how fresh it felt at the time because it didn't. Yeah. It didn't look like the Adam West costume. The Adam West costume, listen, Batman is supposed to have bulletproof armor. Yeah. Now, when you look at Adam West in his costume, it's goofy.
Yeah, it's goofy.
Yeah, what people don't realize about that Batman, like, you know, it was more so the golden age Batman, the more, you know, with the pow, boom, bow. You know what I'm saying? Like, Batman wasn't as dark back then. Like, people don't realize what got Batman dark was Frank Miller. Once he took over Batman, that's when he brought that, you know, the darkness to that character. And Tim Burton did the same thing in cinema. Once he took over Batman, he brought the darkness to that character. Like Batman, that brooding figure that we all know him to be, you know? So
yeah, good,
both
good
of them
point,
really,
yeah.
you know, brought that darkness to that character. If not, we still probably have the corny ass Batman, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, that's a good point. You see, that never crossed my mind.
More props to them for doing that.
Yeah, seriously. And when I watched the original Batman again, because it had been at least 10 years since I've seen it in its entirety, and Gotham feels in the movie, it feels like a pretty good representation of what you would see in the comic books. You know, it's very like not gritty like the Christopher Nolan films like we're going to talk about in the future. Not
right.
that sense of gritty, but it still has like a very ominous feel to it where it feels like a mob town, you know, like like almost like something out of a Martin Scorsese picture, and that's what this film feels like. It feels like a mafia film because we see the origin of Joker, Jack Nicholson as Joker,
Jack Napier,
Jack Napier, right? So then when he becomes a Joker, he wants to take over the underworld and stuff like that. So I thought Tim Burton did for the first true Batman movie, I thought he did a pretty good job.
Right.
But I want to give a shout out to Michael Keaton as Batman slash Bruce Wayne, because I felt like Michael Keaton's performance in both the original Batman and Batman Returns was it's more of an understated performance, but it encapsulates the balance between Bruce Wayne and Batman so well, because it's right. like he's any little thing is going to make him unhinged, especially when Joker, he's like kind of holding Kim Basinger's character, Vicky Vale, hostage, as well. And he's like, "You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts."
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah. And it takes, and it's almost as if to say,
crazy,
you know, it takes one.
Crazy.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. yeah. So it's almost as if to say, you know, It takes one cycle to know another cycle.
Right, exactly. Right. And like and what people realize, what I was probably some don't remember this line, but I never forget it. You know, it was towards the end of the film, and you know, Batman was confronting Joker, and then, you know, Joker's like, "Look what you've done to me," and Batman's like, "You made me, I made you."
Right.
Oh,
I remember that. Yep.
You know, that line alone just it holds weight. You know, because think about it, because like there would be no Batman without the Joker. You know, I mean, that
That's
film,
true.
Like Jack Napier killed his parents, you know, and what forced him to become Batman. So he knew what he meant by he said that.
And now that's a good point, Lewis, that both of you bring up. I mean, essentially, the Joker is the reason for Batman, almost his motivation. In a way, right? Like that's his arch nemesis, right? So he's kind of the guy that drives him, and you see this more so in the Nolan film with Batman and the Joker, that Batman's motivation to be Batman in a way is to not just defeat the Joker, but almost kind of understand who he is as well, because they both come from the same kind of the same thing, like they're looked at as outsiders kind of thing. So, so when you mentioned the mob feel, Lewis, going back to that, that's a great point, because it old school, the Batman 1989 Tim Burton joint does feel like mafia, 1920s kind of thing, got a feel to it. And that grittiness to it. So, that was good. That was a good point. That was, it definitely has that feel. I believe that's what Burton was trying to go for.
Yeah, and another interesting thing too, with Bruce Wayne and the whole divide between him and Batman, is when Vicky Vale is in the Batcave and, you know, Bruce Wayne is still in costume. She asks him, I forgot what the line was, but she had said something about how, things weren't being normal, and
yeah,
he goes,
like,
"Well,
it's a perfect
not
world, you know. Why won't you let me in?"
Yeah, and he's like, "Well, it's not exactly a normal world, is it?"
Right.
And I think that really set the tone for the rest of the film and the rest of the franchise too, at least with Tim Burton's Batman movie.
Right, cause Kim Basinger doesn't get enough credit either. She played a good Vicki Vale.
She did.
I hated her annoying screams. Her fucking screams were the most annoying thing. She screamed. How recently have you guys seen this? Have you guys seen this in preparation for this podcast episode?
I mean, I remember it, man. But I mean, like, she's screaming, bro. Like, a scream supposed to sound superb?
No, but listen, man. I'm telling you, go back and watch it after you do this episode. Go back and I'm not saying that the performance is bad. The performance is good, but oh my god, the screams are just so obnoxious. It's like it's like screams that you would get from a bad 1980s horror film.
Coyote, only Lewis would notice that. Nobody else noticed.
You know? Like nobody. No, you know who noticed it? It was Karen. She's the one that pointed it out, and I'm like, you know you're totally right.
Nobody in their right mind was talking about them damn screams. Like
now you're gonna make me go all the way back to this movie and check this out, because I honestly, that is something that I probably would have noticed if it was really like obnoxious or just really out there.
Bro, like, you're gonna be by your damn self, KO. I ain't going back to check no screams out, man. The woman screamed. It was a damn Joker trying to kill her. Like, what do you like? A scream gotta be good. Yo,
now you're gonna make me watch this whole thing over just to hear this.
It's hilarious, man. It's like borderline camp.
Really,
bro, man.
Yeah. But again, it's just one of the humorous things of the movie.
The one thing about that Tim Burton's film and what Hollywood has done for years and years and years, they put their different spin on films, you know, because traditionally, we don't know the Joker's origin. We still don't know who the Joker is and what he is about. Right. You know, so now, I mean, I still like the Batman film, but now if I was older, like I was now, and I watched that, say like if I'm 30 and 89, if I watched that and the comic book geek I am, I probably wouldn't like that Joker origin, because it's like we don't know who he is. You know, he was a comedian from the comic books to Killing Joke. He was a failed comedian. He was trying to get by. Trying to get money for his pregnant wife, you know, and he dressed up as the Red Hood. Batman confronted him. He got scared. He fell on some chemicals, and then he became the Joker. And we never knew what happened to his wife, what happened to him. We never knew his identity. We still don't know his identity, you know, and that's the allure of the mystery of the Joker.
That's true.
You know, that's true. That's why sidebar, but this Joaquin Phoenix Joker, I mean, I like him. He's a good actor, but they're going to change this whole different spin on it. He's not going to fall in the tub of acid. Just like Heath Ledger didn't fall in the tub of acid, you know? But I was comfortable with Heath Ledger's Joker. Like I said, sidebar, we'll get to that. And it was phenomenal. Of course, the comic book geek me wanted that origin, but then, hey, he still played the Joker.
That's true. I guess that's – and you just brought that up. I guess that's what the Joker film – may touch upon a little bit, but he's not gonna fall into that acid.
Right.
We're gonna need a whole show for that film alone, because
that's Comic Con weekend. I'm gonna see that.
I got my thoughts on that film already. So we'll touch upon that.
It looks like a very, very interesting film, and the fact that they're not even acknowledging Batman at all.
Right.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
That's what I'm saying too. It's almost like this past year with Venom, like no acknowledgement of Spider-Man at all. Sidebar. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, you know, Venom had, it would just, you need Spider-Man for Venom, just like you need Batman for the Joker. Like these heroes don't go hand in hand and villains don't go hand in hand without each other. Like they both balance each other out. They need each other. They're basically Spider-Man and Batman are part of Joker and Venom's origin, you know? So I always find it odd, like, how you incorporate in this film without these two main protagonists.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree, for sure. What do you guys think of Jack Nicholson's performance as Joker? I think it's great. I think it's a fucking amusing performance. It's actually a very terrifying performance, not in the same vein as a Heath Ledger terrifying, but it's terrifying because it's almost like Jack Nicholson conveys like this sense of being a comical kind of villain to the point where you don't really know when he's going to become unhinged or unglued. And I thought it was – it's a very good performance.
It's good. I'm not going to say great. It's good because, honestly, Garreth, he fled your soul, but he made you forget about Jack Nicholson Joker for a while.
Oh yeah! For sure. Nobody could touch Heath Ledger. Without comparing to any other.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's almost disrespectful to compare it. Almost like you don't want to bring up Heath Ledger's Joker. Like Jack Nicholson Joker should be in its own light. You know, they're two different type of Jokers, I think.
Yeah.
You know, with their personalities and everything, but it's like, you know, Heath Ledger set the bar. Like you hate to bring it up, but it's like. There's no way you can't think about Jack Nicholson Joker now and not think of Heath Ledger Joker, because you can't, because it's more recent in our memory. The Dark Knight came out 2008. That's almost maybe 11 years ago now. You know, 1989. That was 30 years ago. You know, that is more recent to us because we all seen it at a mature age.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's true. So
it's like it's you don't want to compare it to because you feel like you're discrediting Jack Nicholson, you forget about him. But hey, his performance was good. But then I always think about the Joker. I always think about Heath Ledger's Joker. Like, wow, he really blew that out of the water. He'll make you forget Jack Nicholson even existed. Which is like I try not to, like you say, Louis, you shouldn't compare it to, and try not to bring it up because like it's in its own entity.
Yeah, it's a good point. What do you think, Keone?
I loved Jack Nicholson, man. I thought he was great. He conveyed a mixture of like comical, psychotic, madman all in one, right? Yeah. Like you got comical because he is the joke, you know, he is the Joker, so he's betraying this guy who's unhinged and thinks that the most sadistic things are funny. And then you also get the gangster, like don't know what he's gonna do, kind of like spontaneous madman aspect of it, while he's laughing and dancing with a Kim Basinger in the bell tower, you know, and then tries to hit her with the poison, like, and then one scene, another scene, tries to hit her with the acid flower and think that, like, you know what I'm saying, like, and laughs at it. So he gave you a good mix of everything. And it's Jack Nicholson. I mean, at this point, he was already an Oscar winner. So he was already well-established, well-respected actor who did this film. And I think he's a classic. When I think of Joker, right, and we're all recent on Heath Ledger's performance, when I think of Joker, my mind goes to Jack Nicholson, not Heath Ledger. Not because, no, and don't get me wrong, Heath was absolutely fantastic. But when I think of Joker, I think of Jack because he's, I guess, I don't know. He was just, I'm partial. I'm also partial to Tim Burton's Batman as well. I just love Tim Burton's Batman. But I respected Jack in this. I thought Jack was great. I thought he was great.
Yeah, no, dude, those are all very good points. I thought overall he was great too. Mm-hmm. Just some final thoughts on the first Batman movie. So this obviously became a huge hit at the box office. Adjusted for inflation, it ended up grossing over $500 million domestically.
Domestically.
Adjusted for inflation. So that's huge. So if you take inflation out of the equation, it grossed over $300 million domestically. And that's huge for 1989. And that really was the catalyst for the modern superhero film for that time, you know, because modern superhero movie would be like the last 15 years. But yeah, this was definitely the catalyst, and Hollywood must have said, you know what, we can make a killing off of more superhero properties. So that was definitely almost of a harbinger of things to come for the next decade, for the 1990s, for better or for worse, as we would see. Now, you also have Prince, the late Prince, doing the soundtrack.
Yep, the Bat Dance.
Yeah. Who would have ever thought, right? And that album, he was,
right?
Yo, like that shit won Grammys. It went multi-platinum. Bro. Like, this was a big thing.
This was a big film. Prince was the man back then. Like, he was fucking Beyonce status, like him and Mike.
He was right alongside Michael Jackson. When you think of pop artists in the '80s, you know, like that's right. Like you either have Michael Jackson or Prince.
And that Batman Mania, bro, like fucking all the fucking memorabilia that was sold and everything. Like if you have half of that shit now in good condition, you're making some bank on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, for
I missed out. I should have kept those McDonald's toys or something, man. When they
were, bro. I got this Batman book, this Batman film book. It talks about the film from 1989, and it's in good condition. It was at a comic book store for $5, and I said, I gotta get this shit. I'll never come across this again.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. I'll show you some pics, Lewis. But yeah, it's a 1989 and everything when it came out. The film came out and everything.
Wow, would you look at that? Maybe I'll raid your house and take it from you. Batman style.
Oh, man.
So, overall letter grade for the movie. Am I sticking to the talking points? So I feel like I'm just going off the cuff here. Let's see.
Nah, man, you're organically flowing. Quick question, both of y'all. What y'all thought of Harvey Dent? Did y'all remember Harvey Dent in that film?
Yeah, that was Lando Calrissian. Billy D. Williams. I totally forgot. When I revisited, I totally forgot Billy D. Williams was in this.
And he was Harvey Dent, bro. It's shit crazy, man. And he actually was going to play Two-Face, they said, in Batman Returns. That would have been kind of odd.
Yeah, I couldn't see it. I didn't think Billy D. Williams was a good fit for that role.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with him being black or whatever, right. But it's just it
now,
wasn't
I don't
a
think
good
he
fit.
Wouldn't play. I mean, he was a good Harvey Dent, because Harvey Dent still was sane, but Two-Face himself, nah.
Hell no. There's no way in God's green earth that Billy D. Williams should have played Harvey Dent. Two-Face.
Two-Face.
There's no way. You know how smooth Two-Face would have been with that Jackson face of his?
Exactly. Lando. And every black mama was loving Billy D. Williams.
And your boy had a perm as well? There's no way. You can't have Two-Face with a perm. You cannot have a comb over. Cannot. Cannot, man. I'm against
that. No freaking way, man. That's hilarious. I'm glad you brought that up, Lincoln, because that's one of the surprises. I'm watching it. I'm like, holy shit, it's Billy D. Williams. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, my overall letter grade for the film, I would give it a solid B. And the reason why is because the narrative is very uneven. It doesn't have a very consistent flow. As I'm watching it, it's like there are certain parts that are thrilling. Then you have your parts that come down, but they come down way too much. And it's kind of testing my patience. It's not a very even flow as far as the consistency of the storytelling goes. I don't know if you guys feel the same way from your memory of the film. But again, this is fresh in my mind because I just revisited it within the last 2 weeks. But I give it a B. Overall,
a B. Okay.
Yeah, a solid B.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. I tend to look at it a little different. I'm going from music, to the score by Danny Elfman, who's my favorite composer.
Oh yes, yes. How could I fucking forget about that? Danny Elfman's score, that is so iconic because that's the same score that was used for the animated series and for Batman Returns. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm taking that into account. I'm taking it to, you know, Tim Burton's take on it, which I enjoyed. I'm giving that like I'm at a B plus A right now.
Oh, Coyote, man.
Yeah, I'm at a B plus A for Batman, dude. I loved it. It's one of my favorite. It's in my top five of all time, of all time movies. It's in my top five easily. So
Batman? Wait. Yeah. Batman, like 1989. Yeah. Batman is in one of your top five overall movies, not just superhero movies. Top five favorite,
not just
films,
superhero
period?
Movies. One of my top five. Let me see what. Top 10. It's in my top 10.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, bro, top five.
No, no. No, top 10.
I'm
top
like, 10. Damn, I would love to see number 4 through right. 1.
Yeah. No. What else you had up there? Still Magnolias?
Steel the boy Magnolias. Said
top 5.
Nah, man, no,
I'm like, yo, what else he got up there, bro?
Definitely top 10, though. Top 10
I could rock with. Top 5? I'm like, I'm with you too, though. So I'm like, huh?
top 10. I had to go through some films.
Yeah,
hey, everybody's entitled to their opinions. Everybody's got a different time.
Everybody's entitled to question too. Like,
yeah. No, top 10. Man. So yeah, I'm giving that movie a B+A, man. That was
okay.
I'm teetering.
What do you think, on the B plus side. Okay, what do you think, Lincoln? What letter grade for you?
I'm gonna give it an A. I'm gonna give it an A just because I'm agree with Coyote some of his points, what it did for its time. Well, first of all, people gotta realize like 1981, this film was supposed to come out. It went in development hell. If you really look at the backstory of Batman, no producer wanted it at the time. It was just going through its ups and downs and stuff. You know, Superman was king at the box office and the superheroes. And at the same time, like for what Tim Burton had to go through to finally get this film done, you know, the overall impact, the album with Prince, the biggest pop star at the time, Danny Elfman, the great score soundtrack, like Coyote was mentioning, just the overall impact of another popular superhero movie, because back then it was just only Superman.
Right.
You know what I mean? Christopher Reeves was just Superman. It was no one else. You know what I'm saying? Else. Then you had some other campy ass films that came out later on after Batman stuff, superhero film. We ain't gonna talk about that. We know what they were. Like we ain't gonna talk about that 1991 Captain America film. That shit was an atrocity.
Or the 1990 Punisher, but yeah, anyway.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like some films were just horrible after that. You know what I'm saying? Terrible. But just its overall impact, man, and just that what Michael Keaton had to go through and how he had to prove people wrong, because people forget this was Mr. Mom. There was a lot of backlash of Michael Keaton getting this part. You know, but Tim Burton rolled with him. He believed in him because he already did Beetlejuice and he knew what this guy was made of. You know, Jack Nicholson, like Coyote said before, he was already established, already top shelf Hollywood. He was the man. You know what I'm saying? Like, he killed the Joker. I mean, and just the craze behind it, man. You know, everybody was riding with this wave, man. I mean, what it did for 1989, the overall impact, man. You know, it brought the dark side of Batman to cinema. You know, we always seen Batman as this campy, corny guy. Like, I mean, thank you, Adam West, you know, for what you did, you know, because, you know, people play Adam West, but he did make Batman popular.
Of course.
We can't knock that. But at the same time, like, we have not seen a dark Batman on film until Tim Burton did something with it. Only Frank Miller made him dark in the comics, and he made Batman what he's supposed to be. So I'm gonna give it an A for its time, man. You know, now, like, say if I was to put the film compared now, of course it wouldn't get an A. But for what it's done, the overall impact, and what, you know, it was a trendsetter. So you got to give it an A for what its cause, for what films left behind it. You know, because a lot of producers now and film directors look towards that film for advice, for guidance.
Right. No, I agree with those points. But Batman, the original Batman is highly influential. Absolutely. But the sequel, this is a perfect segue, by the way. The sequel is the reason why I can't give this a B, because I love Batman Returns that much more than the original. So we're going to take a pause, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Batman Returns and why it's one of the weirdest, most bizarre, but one of the greatest comic book adaptations you can think of when you think of Batman or any other superhero for that matter. So stay tuned. Alrighty, so we are back, and in continuing our discussion of the Tim Burton Batman movies, we had just said we gave our letter grades. I gave it a B, and you guys are veering more towards like an A or so, A minus.
I gave it an A.
Okay. Now, let's talk about how it was a good 3 years before Tim Burton followed up with a sequel, which was Batman Returns. Batman Returns, just a brief overview. Batman Returns to me is like Tim Burton woke up one day and said, let me gather up all of the elements of Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Edward Scissorhands and put all of those into a melting pot and make it into a Batman movie to follow up what I did back in 89. That's the kind of fucking movie Batman Returns is. I absolutely loved Batman Returns when I was a kid. Why? Because when this came out, I was only 4 years old. This was the first... Okay, this was one of the first superhero movies I had seen because I had also seen the Superman movies, which I loved as a kid. But Batman Returns, shit, my fourth birthday party was Batman Returns themed. Nice. So this was a movie that I had seen like dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of times throughout my childhood, and it never got old. Now, I hadn't seen Batman Returns in quite some time until last week. When I revisited this last week, I still enjoyed it immensely, but I found it to be so eccentric. I'm like, yeah, this is the most bizarre fucking thing I have ever seen in my life. Like, I cannot even interpret what the fuck is happening in this movie.
That's what makes it so good, Lewis.
That's what makes it such an enduring sequel. Like, when you ask most people what their favorite Batman movie is pre-Christopher Nolan, they're probably going to tell you Batman Returns, and they probably can't put a finger on as to why. It's bizarre, man. It's like, holy shit. I mean, wow.
You know,
like, Gotham City is like a full circus, first of all, in this movie. Yeah,
yo, I really, Batman Returns was.
And you got a great cast. You got Michelle Pfeiffer. You got Danny DeVito. You got fucking Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken is already weird and odd as shit. When you take him in this movie and put him as the Max Schreck character, like, wow. And then you got Michael Keaton still preserving that same level of darkness and that same wonderful balance of Bruce Wayne, millionaire, and Batman, ominous psychopath, vigilante. Wow, what a very, it's just a very amusing, entertaining sequel. Like, I'm very passionate about it because it's just like,
yeah, Lewis, man. I'm 100,000% on your side. This is my favorite this is my favorite Batman film of all time. Right, it's tied with, of course, The Dark Knight. It's like right there, right? It just gives you a dark look into Tim Burton's creative mind, man. It's everything. I feel this film he had more creative control in.
Definitely
he had control. Yeah, and you could see that it was more. It had a bigger budget. It was better produced in some aspects. It is dark as hell, dude. When I saw this when I was a kid, I was freaked the hell out. I was like, damn. Because I'm coming off of Batman. I'm like, okay, this shit just got like, it turned into like a horror film in some cases. Like,
right, yeah.
This is crazy. But dude, this movie makes me feel, it's so nostalgic for me. The music, mm-hmm. the look, it looks... You know what it is, Lewis? It looks like it's made on a movie set. That's how, like, it looks like it's sets and it's staging and all that stuff. It takes you back to what films like that used to look like back in the 90s, where you knew they used film sets versus just natural going out into parks and filming it. But instead, Tim Burton used miniatures and movie sound stages and stuff like that, and you feel that in the film. And then he just adds his touch to it. The music, the score is so good. It's dark and methodic and I'm 100% on with this. This is a good one. This is one of my favorites.
Now Lincoln, before you
Lincoln.
Before you give your feedback, I just wanted to add the Batman costume in this film is probably my favorite.
Better. Yep.
Oh boy.
Yeah, let's hear it, Lincoln. What do you got to say? You don't sound too thrilled.
Yeah, man, I disagree with both of you wholeheartedly, bro.
Oh, man.
Yeah, bro. Like, I'm sorry, man. Batman Returns did not do it for me, bro. It wasn't I don't think it was good at the first Batman, honestly. I think Tim Burton overdid it. He wanted so much creative control. I think he was trying so hard to top the first one. To me, it didn't feel organic. I didn't like the first scene, which started out with the clowns and everything, because to me, it still reminded me of The Joker is Alive. Why is there a bunch of clown henchmen going on here? Like, clowns can't relate to Catwoman or Danny DeVito. Like, I didn't get the whole clown scene again, the clown henchmen. That made no sense to me. I thought Michelle Pfeiffer was brilliant as Catwoman. I did like Danny DeVito as Penguin. I can't front. I would have liked to seen Robin in this one, but I guess they didn't have enough time for Robin. You know, because if Batman Returns, and I thought, like, he's facing two villains, why not? This would be the perfect time to incorporate Robin. He needs help. I mean, he did it in Batman Forever. Where's someone else at to help him, you know?
Right. yeah, that's a good point.
I did like Michael Keaton, of course. He's one of my favorite Batmans.
Yeah.
But as far as it goes, man, like, I don't know, man. Christopher Walken, I liked his character. He was weird and quirky and everything else, you know. But
So Lincoln, what didn't you like?
Yeah, it seemed like you liked it.
what turned you off about? There's got to be something that you like.
I mean, like, I like the character development stuff, but like, I just don't think it was good as the first one, bro. I'm sorry, like, it didn't get me. I seen Batman Returns, like, I just don't think it was good as the first Batman. I don't.
Do you think it was a good Batman? Like, aside from the first, if this was the only one that came out, what would you think about it then?
I would scale 1 to 10. I give it a 7.5.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right.
That's respectable.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of my gripes with Batman Returns was Catwoman's origin story makes zero sense.
Absolutely no sense.
Absolutely no sense. Yeah, like push out of a window.
Push out a window. The cat's reviver.
Right. And she said, right. Like, how does that make any type of sense whatsoever? Like, yeah, the cat's just, like, they just start nibbling on her finger. All of a sudden, what, they're injecting her with cat-like abilities?
Right.
I never understood that. I'm like, I'm thinking, okay, maybe if I revisit it as an older man, I'll understand it more. Nope, still have a bunch of question marks. Like, what?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's one of the story plots that you still don't get to this day. I don't get it. I don't know what she gets. Number one, Lewis. Let's just point this out, guys. Right? She gets dropped from this had to be what, 100-story window.
It was a drop. It was a drop.
This should have killed her. Like, this should have killed her. So let alone some cats bite her and lick her marks, and now she gets revived, and now she can do flips and beat the hell out of people. Like that.
That's Tim Burton being Tim Burton.
And I loved it. I loved every second of it. See that? Yeah. I'm God, I was a sucker for it.
The penguin makes you feel for him too. Like, he actually takes you along for a ride. Like, you actually feel for this person, but then you realize he's a piece of shit. But his upbringing and everything, you know, how his parents abandoned him in the sewers and stuff, like.
Yeah, that was Pee Wee Herman as his father, man. That was Paul Rubens right there.
Yo! That's true. Yeah, yeah. Yep. I was looking at the guy funny, and I'm like, holy shit, that is Paul Rubens.
That was Paul Rubens, man. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. That's the Tim Burton connection. So this is what I'm talking about. He took the Pee Wee Herman movies, put them together with Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands, and this is what you got. I'm telling you.
Yeah, there's definitely some Edward Scissorhands in this film, man. The way it looks, the
score.
The score. And I mean, what Tim does in these films, right? What I like about or what I love about what he did is that he created the blueprint for how we may look or what other directors will take and shape Batman as, right? So we got the dark, brooding, almost fantasy-driven kind of Batman with Tim. And then when you see what Nolan did, Nolan took a little bit of that dark, brooding kind of, but he goes into realism a lot with The Dark Knight. And you get that a little bit with Batman Begins and stuff like that. So he took a good chunk of what Tim did, and kind of molded into today's films and how we look at it. But man, you got to respect the Tim Burton joints, man. They were so fun. They're fun. They're fun to watch.
They're fun. Yeah. I think that's the key word with both the 89 and 92 films. Tim Burton's Batman movies are fun. Like they're mindless entertainment with a little bit of substance, but they're fun, man.
They don't need to make sense. That's what it is. You know what I'm saying?
With Christopher Nolan, I'll tell you this much. This afternoon I revisited Batman Begins because I'm revisiting the Dark Knight trilogy for our next volume of this episode. Right. And I'll touch on this obviously in that episode, but Batman Begins is an excellent, excellent, excellent movie. Right. But it requires more thinking, you know. Yes. It's not as mindless as the Tim Burton ones. You know, you can get lost in that universe. This one, it's grounded in realism. It's grittier, you know. Yeah. It doesn't have as many fantastical elements to it.
Yeah, and don't forget.
Yeah, go ahead. That Batman killed two people in that movie.
Which one, Returns?
Yes.
You know, can you refresh my memory? Who I thought he killed people.
He burns one alive, and the other one's being blown up.
Oh yeah, yeah, with the Batmobile, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. They got in the way, man. They got in the way.
I mean, Batman not supposed to. Batman not supposed to kill people, bro. Like,
yeah, he put the dynamite clock on him and he punched.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
and right. He falls into the little hole and And I thought about that too. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess Batman's ideology just goes out the window, huh?
Yeah, man. I know, and when I was thinking about why, because KO is like, what didn't you like about that film? And I thought about it and I'm like, that was another thing, man. Like, that's not Batman, bro. Batman's he has a code, he doesn't kill people.
But you got to remember what happens here, man. So you got Tim Burton who is reimagining who this guy is, right? So he's not going solely by comic book story. Batman doesn't kill people. He's gonna create a character who is conflicted and also kind of got to do what he has to do in the situations. And I felt like in this film because he had two big arch nemesis after him. No, actually three if you count Christopher Walken.
Right.
He went to the extreme, and I think that's what the darkness of this film is that you're entering a man's mind who is going to do whatever he needs to do to save Gotham. And if that means he has to take out a couple of people, then that's what it is. And Lewis, you brought up a good point, man. You in those two films in Batman Returns and Christopher Nolan's trilogy, they are two different types of directors. You have one who's going pure visual and that fantastical feel, and you got one who's actually going to make you sit and think about who this man Batman is and the world he's in and just everything that comes with the complex components of that story. So it's very interesting to see the contrast when you mention that, because they are two totally different series when you think of those directors and how they attack that story.
Yeah, it's funny because I tried to get my sister-in-law Nisi to get onto this episode. Shout out to Nisi, by the way. She said that she wouldn't have had time to revisit the Batman movies because she wanted it to be fresh in her mind. But she's one of those detractors of Christopher Nolan. She hates Christopher Nolan. She hates everything that he does. So she's so attached to the Tim Burton movies that like nothing will ever surpass that. So that's
interesting
just
to get on for the Christopher Nolan joints, man. She'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to convince her to get on to that one. But yeah, but I feel like those are the different kinds of fans. It's like you either, I mean, of course, you can love all of them. You can even love the Joel Schumacher ones. But I feel like there's always the type of fan. Yeah,
nah, we're going to get into that. We ain't loving no Joel Schumacher.
I can't wait till we get to that portion of the episode.
Bro. But
we Good have, go you, ahead, go you ahead. Can always have, I feel like you're always going to have the fan that veers more towards the Tim Burton ones and the fans that veer more towards the realism and the war on terror allegory of the Dark Knight, Christopher Nolan ones. So it's interesting.
Quick question for both of you. Tim Burton was looking to put Marlon Wayans as Robin in Batman Returns, and Marlon Wayans confirmed this. Could Marlon Wayans have been Robin?
No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
You know, this is the first. I've never heard of this story.
I never heard that either.
As Robin?
Yes.
Shit, you might as well just fucking have me as in an audition.
Bro, like he said it. You could read articles. You could watch it on YouTube. He said Tim Burton wanted to talk to him about being Robin, but they just didn't have enough time for the film to do it. But he was about to be Robin.
That would have been the worst move they could have done with the film. I mean, forget about Michelle Pfeiffer falling out of a skyscraper and become a cat.
Exactly,
bro. There's no way.
Because I'm looking at it thinking, like, how could this have worked?
It wouldn't have. As a matter of fact,
that probably could have been for the movie, bro.
Tim Burton was clearly on some good drugs around this time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That probably would have, bro, that movie would have been changed forever.
It would have been changed forever. I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine.
This is Marlon Wayans coming off of fucking Living Color, like.
No way, man. There's no way. No way.
That would have turned into Damon Wayans as Blank Man. That's what it would have turned into.
Yo, Blank Man. That's a very underrated comedic film right there, man.
I love Blank Man. I fucking love Blank Man. And David Alan Grier. Ah, come on. Blank Man is awesome.
Other guy.
Yeah, Blank Man is awesome. I got to revisit Blank Man when I get a chance.
My costume is bulletproof.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Amazing.
And you know what? This is a major, major sidebar, but Blank Man, when you really watch that film and think about it, and how you have all like the speech bubbles and the action bubbles of like bam, kapow, that's an ode and a love letter to Adam West and those Batman movies.
Yo, I'll never forget, man. J5 now when J5 blew up.
J5.
Oh, J5. Oh, man.
Then my man, he got Manelli. See you in 20 years, Manelli.
Manelli, oh my God, man, you're bringing it back. I gotta watch this movie again. I see that
now
shit.
I gotta watch that.
Bro. Oh my goodness.
Blank Man, classic.
Yeah. So, overall letter grade for Batman Returns, I'm giving this shit an A minus.
I'm at a solid A.
Yeah, I'm giving an A minus only because of the Catwoman origin story and other minor gripes, but yeah, A minus for sure.
I'm at a solid A.
B minus for me.
Wow. B
minus. Yeah, no love for Batman Returns.
Nah, bro. I'm sorry.
But now you guys see why I can't give the original anything higher than a B, because I just love Returns too much.
Yeah, man, but a lot of people, man, some people don't like Returns, man. I mean, it is not one of the most scrutinized films, but it's a lot of debate over that film.
It's, you know why? Because it's so bizarre that I don't even think audiences knew how to interpret it. It didn't gross as much money as the 1989 Batman. I think it surpasses its predecessor in terms of, in some cases, like, I think the story flows more organically. It flows a little better. It's more fun for sure, but I don't know. I think audiences just found it a little too weird, which is why it didn't gross as much money. It didn't have the same type of financial impact that the first one had.
Right, exactly. And Like, that's the only Batman film I feel like either you got good or bad in Batman films. This is the only Batman film that's a 50-50 argument, I think, that some people are going to say it's good and some people are going to say it's bad. Like, there's never a solid answer on Batman Returns.
I totally see what Lincoln is saying. I've been in conversations with people who love Batman movies, and whenever this one comes up, it's either you some loved it or some just didn't get it, and they're like, "Nah, man, that's not that's I can't put that in my top favorites. Like, I can't."
Yeah,
right.
Like,
I've met people
it's
like
the
that too.
most it really is the most controversial Batman film to talk about. Like, either it sucks or, like I said, it's good. And like Coyote said, like, people either you get it or you don't get it.
But
Like,
I can't go as far as saying this movie sucked,
no,
right?
no,
You
no,
know,
no,
and
no.
I
What I
never.
mean, right? No, I don't think it is suck, but there's some people that just don't like it.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. And
No,
Ruth, you're right. I
I
mean,
can see that.
the movie's budget was 80 million for 19, what was this, 1992,
Right.
$80 million budget, and it made 162 million.
Right. And then you gotta look at the year
Before
before.
inflation,
Crazy.
of course.
The year before.
That's
What?
before inflation, yeah.
Right. But the year before, a movie that came out that was an action blockbuster was Terminator 2.
Yep.
Ah. That's
Yeah.
true. That's
You
true.
know what I mean? That made bank.
Well, I mean, Terminator 2 is that's in a league of its own, you know.
Right.
So are we saying that this film didn't gross as much because people just didn't know what to make of it, or because it came out 3 years later and kind of the time, I mean, we're in the 90s at this point and times
I
and
think
movies have
both.
just changed.
I'm agree with both of
It
your
could,
points, Kaylee.
yeah, I mean, it can be a combination of both. I mean, I remember Batman Returns did have a lot of promotion, like very similarly to the way the first one had, which, you know, it had cross marketing with the merchandise, the toys for the kids. So it was very well marketed for sure. It was like everywhere.
Yeah.
But again, it could have just been one of
Video
those
games,
things where it
man.
was like a little too bizarre.
God, it's so good though, man. I can't.
I love it.
I
I
can't. I
personally
love it.
love it. I
Yeah,
love
man,
it, man.
I'm gonna have to disagree with y'all, bro. Yeah, I'm definitely in love with that shit because I didn't love that movie, bro.
Oh man, it's so good. Oh man, I love it.
Well,
Love.
it's gonna. Oh boy, Tim Burton. This is where Tim Burton stops. He decided not to return for the future of the franchise. He signed on to Batman Forever as a producer, but yeah.
He didn't like the direction
A
that
man by the
Warner.
name of Joel Schumacher with the next two Batman movies really set Batman and the rest of the superhero genre back for a while.
Almost
So
10 years, bro.
yeah, nearly 10 years. So
Yeah, bro, because like he didn't like Tim Burton didn't like the direction of where it was going. I still think he wanted to leave anyway, but I think he probably would have been less hesitant to go if they would have kept it in the dark way he wanted it. Like, they wanted too much of the family fun atmosphere. That's why they
yeah.
got it over to Joel Schumacher, which was
Fair.
fucking the worst thing they ever could have done.
Very
Yeah.
family friendly. So when we come back, let's get into some talk about Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. Oh boy.
Oof. Oh boy.
Oh boy.
All right, all right, all right. We are back. And yes, Tim Burton did not return for the next well, he would never ever return for Batman, but he signed on as producer for Batman Forever. Batman Forever, I have a lot of fond memories of Batman Forever because
Hold on, I didn't mean to cut you off. Hold on. Hold on. Actually, I did mean to cut you off because how dare you? How dare you forget the one film, the one Batman film that was in between Batman Returns and Batman Forever?
What, Mask of the Phantasm?
Yes!
Well,
Oh.
yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking about live action. But yes,
Yeah,
Mask of the Phantasm was great.
Batman film. That shit was phenomenal.
Yeah, that was really fucking good. I mean,
I will agree with both of you
yeah.
gentlemen. Yes.
Yeah.
We
No, I
ain't got to
mean, the
talk about
Batman,
we ain't got to talk
we
about
could have a freaking podcast. We can have a podcast topic about the animated series of Batman by itself, but
Right, but
absolutely,
we ain't
yeah.
you gotta talk about it now, but like we can't forget how much and that did a lot of box office too.
It did.
It did well at the box office. We just, you know what I mean? We, some people forget that Batman movie, animated or not. That was a good film.
Great film.
Yeah.
Great film.
That came out actually, I think it came out the following year, Batman Returns.
No, it came out in 93, the year after.
Yeah, that's what I said, the year after.
Yep.
All right, so yeah, Mask of the Phantasm. So yeah, we still, Batman is still on a roll. Batman Forever had, here's the thing, Batman Forever had the benefit of having an all new cast of A-list actors, one. Look, Val Kilmer was a big star at the time. Jim Carrey was hot at the time.
Yeah,
hot as anybody. Well, no, Chris O'Donnell, yeah, not yet.
But Nicole Kidman,
this was like her first, like one of her first major roles, so she was on her way. But yeah, Tommy Lee Jones. It's like, yeah Tommy Lee Jones, you know, he's, this is an all-star cast. Yeah. I saw this movie in the theaters, and I loved it as a six-year-old because, you know, this was marketed more towards kids. Right. Now, Gotham City and Batman Forever, for whatever reason, is more high tech. It doesn't have that same crime-ridden feel. You got fucking thugs with face paint.
Oh my god, bro, do you remember that, bro? And the glow-in-the-dark hockey sticks and shit.
Yeah,
oh,
the glow sticks.
Yeah, I mean.
It was so 90s, bro. It just reminded me of a 90s electronica techno music, bro. Right.
It's a very, this is a very 90s movie.
Like, I felt like Real McCoy was playing the whole movie. It's just so 90s, bro. But go ahead, my bad. I'm sorry. Bad memories.
No, it's cool, man. So, directed by Joel Schumacher, stars all those aforementioned people. Listen, and look, I revisited it in the past week or so, so it's very fresh in my mind. Batman Forever is not, I'm gonna say it right now, it's not terrible. It is actually serviceable. It's mildly entertaining, but the problem with this film is that the cons outweigh the pros by a lot. And a lot of it has to do with the choice of actors who are playing these certain characters. So Val Kilmer as Batman is very weird. It's awkward. He's not Michael Keaton for sure. He just doesn't cut it for me as Bruce Wayne or Batman. Or is it just me?
Go ahead, Gil. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead, Lincoln.
You know what's so crazy, man? Like, when I was 6 years old, I loved that movie. Like, that movie.
Everybody did when they were kids. I loved it as a kid.
Religiously, I would watch it every day after school. My mother, she would get so tired of around that damn film because I would have to watch it. Like, I loved that movie. And I had the action figures. I had the video game. I had everything. Like it was just popping. Batman Forever was popping in the 90s. 95, that shit was life.
Of course.
But
I
seen it years later. And maybe I was around maybe 27, 28. Maybe 2 years ago, I seen it again. And I was like, yo, why the hell did I like this movie? It showed you that. Like, when you look at shit back then and you look at it now, you're like, wow. Like, when you're older, your eyes open up more. Like, yo, this movie is horrible.
It does not hold up well.
It sucks. Like, I was like, wow, what did I like about this movie as a kid? You know? And it's like, I don't really blame the actor necessarily. I don't think Val Kilmer fit Batman, but like you said, Lou, there was some eight. Like, Val Kilmer in the 90s was the shit. Nicole Kidman was on the way. You had Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey. Was smoking hot. He was everywhere.
Right.
I mean, it was Joel Schumacher. I feel like Tim Burton could have made a better film with that. If you would have gave Tim Burton that film, it would have been a better film. It just...
Well, you also got a shit on the screenwriters,
right.
too.
Yeah. Warner Brothers and Joel Schumacher wanted to go in this family fun direction, and it's just Batman's not family fun. This isn't Superman.
Yeah, dude. I didn't hate Val Kilmer at first.
Right.
I didn't love him, but I didn't hate him.
Right. That's my feeling too. Sorry to cut you off, but yeah, I feel ambivalent towards Val Kilmer. Like I didn't hate it, but I don't.
I just felt sorry for him.
Right. Right. Because, and you know, Jim Carrey as the Riddler was to me probably the best choice out of all the characters. I think he was pretty damn good as the Riddler for this movie. I hated Tommy Lee Jones's face and his, and it looked so painted on and fake, and it looked like it was meant not to scare kids because they were going in this family friendly feel, and it looked like it was meant to not make you not make a kid not can't or not be able to sleep at night kind of thing, right? Thing was like it you know what it was? It was like a like Lincoln said, it was like a rave party disco, like all mixed in one. The colors were vibrant and bright. I mean, it was totally different than what the Tim Burton did. They put it this way, they did everything opposite of Burton. The characters were lighter, the colors and the scene was lighter, the violence was even lighter. Like everything was more, it was just lighter. And I don't know. I'm really torn about this. This one is the one I'm torn about.
They tried to make it cool and it wasn't cool. They were trying to relate to kids in the 90s.
Yeah, you know it wasn't like, cool.
You know what I mean? The 90s, man, the techno music, electronic, all that shit, the bright colors and that. I mean, it was 90s shit. You know, they made it too 90s. They didn't make it Batman. They made it Batman in the 90s. It was going with the 90s flavor. And I just, even that album, like, you know what I mean? Method Man, Brandy was on the album. Smashing Pumpkins, like
Seal had a hit
single
from a rose. You know what I mean? Kiss from
a rose. You two, hold me, thrill me, kiss me, kill me. Like everything was so.
That's my joint. That's my joint too.
I love that song. I was bumping it today.
It had a good soundtrack.
Yeah, man. You know what I mean? But that was it. Was just 90s, man. 90s going wrong, bro. If I could say it,
I don't know, man. I'm very torn about this. This one I didn't hate. It wasn't definitely not my favorites, but I could sit back and still enjoy parts of it. So
yeah. And you know what? As I was revisiting it, I found myself still enjoying it. I mean, I was tearing it to shreds for the most part, but I still found myself enjoying it. It wasn't like, you know, it was piss poor, terrible, like the one that followed it that we'll get into. But you know what I did like a lot? I like the gadgetry in Batman Forever. This was really the first Batman movie where we see Batman playing with a whole lot of toys. And I love the stealth suit that he has at the end when he's finally confronting the Riddler and Two-Face. That stealth suit was good.
I don't know about that. I ain't like that suit that much.
Is that the...
Hey, you know what? Batman Forever, if it succeeded in anything, it definitely succeeded in making kids wanting to buy the toys. Yeah, sure. Because I went and bought action figures with the Batman stealth suit and all this other shit. Like, yeah, man, that Batmobile was pretty fucking dope.
Right.
For you know, it looked very 90s. It's like I said, from a gadgetry technological standpoint, Batman Forever is a pretty nice looking film from an appearance standpoint.
It's very clean, very crisp with its look, and like I said, the colors and how they kind of brighten up Gotham City was interesting, and you know the criminals got face paint that glow in the dark and stuff like you know, like it was just it was like a bad acid trip. That's what it was. You know what I'm saying? Like
Lewis, you like that Batmobile?
I like that Batmobile. I do.
I didn't hate it either.
Mm.
I didn't.
No, it's not as good as the one from the Tim Burton movies, but it's like a nice updated high tech version of it.
Like that Batmobile. Batman Returns Batmobile was my favorite. I didn't like that Batmobile.
I'm not exactly the. Me defending Batman Forever, I'm not exactly defending the Godfather here. So, so you know, you're duly noted, all your criticisms. All right. But my overall letter grade for Batman Forever, a C. I'm gonna give it a C, because you know what? I could sit back and watch Batman Forever and just laugh, you know, because it's very campy, and I just laugh at it. It's a C. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I'm giving it a C.
F.
Whoa.
Now you cannot give this shit an F, Lincoln. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but damn, at least give it a D plus. All right,
I'm gonna give it a D, man. D minus.
D minus.
Jesus Christ. Ooh. It's not that bad. Holy cow.
You don't know what you're talking about, Lewis. You watched it with your kid. You probably was happy again. Yeah, that shit was horrible. They killed Batman. And this one, this next one we're talking about, oh, my God.
Oh, no. Don't even get me. Oh, boy. Let's. You know what? We're not even going to take a break. Let's just get right into it.
Yeah, go for it.
Now, Joel Schumacher, based off the success, Batman Forever did gross a lot of money. It was a big hit. So what is Warner Brothers going to do? Hey, let's put out another Batman movie. This time we'll add Batgirl, and we'll add even more A-list actors, and we'll even make it more family-friendly, and we'll add nipples to Batman and Robin's costumes. And we'll get some booty shots up in there when they're getting dressed. At donning their
attire. That was in Batman Forever 2 they did, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they did that in Batman Forever, but this Batman and Robin, I just was revisiting this as of yesterday, literally. This shit is fucking horrible. Yo. It is, oh my God. I loved it when it first came. I even had the bootleg VHS when it came out. Because, you know, I'm hyped because I loved Arnold Schwarzenegger, still do. So I'm like, oh man, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze. Alicia Silverstone is hot off of Clueless, so she's playing Batgirl.
So much money for that, Mr. Freeze, man.
Yeah, I mean, Uma Thurman was hot at the time. She's hot off of Pulp Fiction and shit. So, and George Clooney, obviously, ER. But boy, oh boy.
Yeah, dude.
I loved it. I don't know what the fuck. Similarly to you, Lincoln, when you loved Batman Forever, you watched it years later, right. You said, what? That was my experience. Back in 1997 and 1998, I loved Batman and Robin. I loved this movie. I watched it nonstop. Fast forward a few years later, I said, what the fuck is this? George Clooney is not even acting. Yeah, like, he's smirking all the time. He's smirking in, like, every scene. Bro. He does this weird bobblehead thing whenever he's speaking.
Yeah.
This movie is fucking terrible. Uma Thurman doesn't even know whether to be over the top or just, I don't know if she was on drugs. Like, oh my God. You know a movie's bad when the star of the film is Arnold Schwarzenegger with corny dialogue and all.
Oh man, Lewis. Oh man, Lewis.
Everyone, chill.
Oh man.
Or how about, What did he say when he gets broken out of prison? He says something like a really bad line. This is chock full of bad one-liners. Man. But he's like, something, a rescue service that delivers. Wow. I'm just like.
This is a tough watch. This is a tough watch. Yeah, man. Even in 1997, I knew this was garbage when I watched it. Because, dude, it was so. I don't even know. I don't know what the hell Joel was doing because he goes away from Forever. Like, Forever was nothing like it. Didn't look like this. It didn't feel like this. He went like a notch above getting people to hate this film. He hit the mark of people saying, "Man, you're gonna leave us like this for another like decade until we get a new movie." Like, wait,
people wanted to shoot this motherfucker.
Yo, this was
this God shit awful. Was the lowest grossing Batman movie at the time.
It should, rightfully so. It should.
Right. The highest budget. And it this had the highest budget too, though.
Yeah, it had the biggest budget. Yeah, exactly.
That Batman film would just.
It was all levels of good about that film.
I can't think of one fucking thing.
No, there's nothing good about this film.
Oh, I could think of something. It makes for a great 2 a.m. movie because it's hilarious.
When you're high or drunk or some shit.
Exactly.
No, I'm telling you, you don't even have to be high or drunk. You know, no. Save your liquor, save your weed. Okay. Well, save your liquor and save your drugs. Watch this shit sober, and you're gonna fucking die laughing.
We all consider George Clooney is the worst Batman ever,
of all time.
Yes, it is universally accepted. George Clooney is the absolute worst Batman.
What
were they
thinking, getting George Clooney to do this? And I felt like George didn't even take this role seriously. Like you said, Lewis, he was always smiling. He was like, oh, he was always upbeat. Like, this ain't Batman, bro. Like, what the fuck is going on here?
But but we gotta also blame the writing. The writing was god awful, man.
Oh,
like,
man.
This oh, my shit was horrible. Bro. The writing was terrible.
Thank God that The Dark Knight Rises came out and did justice for Bane, because Bane was fucking atrocious.
Oh, man.
You know, as I was revisiting Batman and Robin, Bane changes colors throughout the film. Like, at one point, he's strangling Batman and has him in a chokehold, and his arms are green, like as if he's the Hulk.
And he's yellow and green. Bane was horrible.
Yeah, he goes from fucking normal skin to yellow to beige to green.
And Mr. What the fuck is man looking like a frozen Terminator? I'm like, come on, man. Like, he was basically the Terminator with ice powers.
Yeah, it was. Bro, like, yeah, the worst.
Yeah, this was Silverstone was so funny
with the Batgirl shit. Then fucking
that
scene with the satellites putting the heat rays on to make people fucking defrost.
Oh man.
When
the computer was upside down, she was like, well, a woman always has to do a man's job. Like, bitch, what? Like, what is going on? Like,
yeah, it's
upside down. What are you talking about?
Yeah, this was the film that almost single-handedly killed the Batman franchise forever. Right. No pun intended. Yep. Because Christopher Nolan and Warner Brothers didn't come out with Batman Begins until 2005. That's 8 years.
Yeah.
This was around the time. This is 1997, the same summer that Spawn came out. Clearly, Hollywood did not give a shit about superhero comic book movies. They did not take this seriously. They didn't, because they didn't handle any of these properties with any type of care whatsoever.
No, they did not care.
I mean, this film was simply it was a cash cow. I mean, they were just seeing what they could get out of it because of the success of Forever. And they were seeing, hey, Joel, you got one more in you? And Joel probably was out of his mind at this point. It was like, all right, let's do it. And almost destroyed this entire series, like you said, Lewis. Like, this I can't even, Lewis, it's
he
so
basically
bad.
Did destroy the series.
I can't even watch it. Like, I can't. It's not even one of those films I can never watch.
Yeah, I would never be like, oh, let's watch it for nostalgia. Like, no.
No.
But he basically did destroy the series, if you think about it. He did.
Joel Schumacher is the person that almost put the proverbial nail in the coffin. Yeah, I mean, there's no other.
I'm not gonna say that, though. I think he destroyed that line of Batman series, because at the end of the day, another Batman film was going to come out sooner or later. He didn't destroy Batman itself. It took 8 years, but Batman's a symbol. It's never going to get destroyed. But for as far as that film series goes, he destroyed it.
Hey, unbeknownst to us, we didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
Right, but I still think that – I don't think Batman would have got eliminated forever. Hell no. But people would have found a way to bring Batman back.
I mean, everything comes full circle. You know, everything gets rebooted and shit like that. So, yeah, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
I just think it's hilarious how if you guys you got to do what I just did over the past week or so. You got to watch all of them in chronological order, all the Batman movies, and you're going to see how they progressively got either stranger or worse.
Right.
From 1989 to 1997.
It's just
amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a look at that, because they even just talking about it, Lewis, and you could see the progression of where the film changes hands, obviously, between Burton and Schumacher. I mean, they had two totally different visions for it. I wonder if Schumacher got a lot of his creative thoughts on the film by industry executives of the studio. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder how much we saw in these films was Schumacher. You get what I'm saying? Like, how, who did he, was he the one who said, hey, let's paint the gangsters with glow sticks and face paint and forever, or let's make Two-Face's face look like a mask you can get from Party City during Halloween. You know what I'm saying? Like, how, I wonder how much input was him and how much was studio saying, hey, we need to make this a little more friendly, a little less scary, a little, you know, a little more bright. You know, I wonder where that line of creativity was at. You know what I'm saying?
I think it was the studio, because when I looked at the credits, I don't think Joel Schumacher even wrote the screenplay.
No, he didn't.
I think he was just behind the camera. So I think a lot of that had to do with the studio. Just, you know, stupid studio politics. And they're still making the same fucking mistake with all the DC movies that they're putting out these days.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, obviously, because Shazam, Wonder Woman, like those were good.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, it just seems like they're running a ship that has like no direction whatsoever. And right. I think that's what you kind of saw in the mid to late 90s with Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, where they knew what they wanted, but it's almost as if they were ready to just throw the towel in with the Batman franchise. They were just like, yeah, you know, we made as much money as we possibly could, or as we made the amount of money that we saw it. So now let's just have some fun and just give everybody mindless entertainment, which is totally unfair to the fans, especially those who read the comics religiously.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it was a huge disservice, a huge injustice, if you will.
That's true.
Sure. Right.
Needless to say, the letter grade for Batman and Robin is going to be an F.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that's
yeah, we don't need to go around. Yeah, it's an F. Bro.
That's an F.
Crazy. If I could give it an F minus, I would give it an F minus.
Yeah.
That's where I would. If I could give it a Z, I would give it a Z.
It's got to go lower on the Richter scale.
Yeah, it's got to go low, man.
Holy shit.
What
I'm trying, you know, and again, man, other than the unintentional humor, I'm really trying to find a positive about Batman and Robin, and there really is none. Other than, oh, you know what? Uma Thurman looks hot as Poison Ivy, but that's it.
That's true.
Yeah, she was hot in her day. She was a sexy Poison Ivy, so I could see why Batman and Robin would quarrel over her.
Right.
But still, it was so silly.
Dumb. Yeah, it's very silly, very silly, very.
I want a Robin signal.
Oh, you know,
oh, Poison Ivy was right. You're just jealous.
Now I
the only good
I will
thing,
admit something, only, fellas. Go ahead, I will admit it. Something. I do have tattooed on me the Batman and Robin symbol, though, because I'm not gonna lie, I think the symbol was dope.
Those are dope.
I do have that symbol tattooed on me, man. So I took that much from the film.
So it left an impression on you, Keone.
The symbol when the opening credits come on and you see the Batman big Batman symbol in the background, followed by the Robin symbol, you're like, okay, maybe this is going to be a good movie. And then you get fooled terribly by Joel Schumacher once again. And he lets you down for a good 2 hours and 5 minute runtime of this movie. So
that opening little digital montage, that's probably the best part of the movie.
The best part of the film. And that's it. That's it.
Yeah, bro. Yo, did you like them silver and black Batman outfits?
I liked them when I was 9. Yeah, I don't. I think they're fucking corny as hell now.
Terrible. 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 Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only good thing about that movie, but not even because that rapist sings the song. Yeah. Our rapist had a song.
Oh, yeah. That was on the Batman and Robin soundtrack, right? Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
And Gotham City was a dope song. I like that song. Oh, I think we lost Lincoln.
Oh.
Oh, he got trapped in the quantum realm.
Oh no, the quantum realm is back.
let me re-invite him. But Yeah, you know, I totally forgot that Gotham City.
Yeah, I
forgot about that.
That's right. That was
That was a good song. I mean, is it okay for me to say that I still like the song?
You know, listen, man. To each his own, Louis. TJ.
Hey, I mean, no, I gotta see what's acceptable these days, you know, because God forbid I drive around, or God forbid I'm in my backyard bumping R. Kelly. Ugh.
Yeah, man, listen, you gotta be careful of that, brother. You gotta be careful.
Yeah, no, if I listen to R. Kelly, that's in the privacy of my own home where nobody else can hear it. Also,
yeah, they're gonna call it nobody here. no bumping grind, none of that, Louis. None of that.
Yeah, no, that's like strictly. That's strictly headphone play. You can't bump that everywhere.
Yeah,
you go.
You can't bump that. Yeah, you can't go. You can't do that.
Now, do you think? I don't know. Do you think there could have been anybody? Okay. Here's a better question. Do you think Val Kilmer should have reprised his role in Batman and Robin, or do you think they should have cast somebody else entirely as Batman?
I don't know because I was thinking
about it. I'm like, I don't know what I would prefer.
They should have kept Val Kilmer.
Yeah,
Val Kilmer.
That would have made sense for continuity purposes.
Yeah, keep Val Kilmer, man. And if you're not going to keep Val, honestly, I don't even know who at the time in 1997 would have made a good Batman. I can't even think of an actor right now who was on top of the game to play Batman.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you either.
I couldn't even think of it. I did. Listen, I enjoyed Val, and I think he would have been fine in this. But once again, we're talking more story and the writing here, and I think it would just Val would have made no difference. It would have still sucked. So it would have still sucked. So I think George made it worse because he just came off as this like nonchalant, cocky, like this arrogant, like I don't care about anything type of Batman. I'm not trying hard to be Batman kind of feel for it. So I think Val would have been a little bit better in that aspect, but everything else from the look to the villains to just everything, the nipples. I mean, everything would have just been, it would have been the same. And I don't think it would have made a difference.
Yeah, you know what? You're probably right.
Val Kilmer.
Yeah, I just thought of it as an interesting question, but I don't think it made a difference. But shame on George Clooney, because George Clooney is one of the most respected actors in Hollywood.
Now he
makes good films. Well, yeah, now he is, right. But, I mean, look, this is a year after From Dusk Till Dawn. So you know what George Clooney is capable of, but it's like he had – when you look at him on screen and all his scenes, it's almost as if he had no desire to play this role. Like you could clearly see that he just took it for the paycheck. Yeah. Like he's not, there's no type of emotional stakes in his face. He's not emoting any type of emotion. Like he's not emoting any type of acting. Like it's just so puzzling.
It's
just a terrible performance, man.
You can
not even a terrible Batman performance, just terrible acting.
Yeah. No, you can definitely see this is a role where his agents were like, Hey George, listen, man, they're gonna give you 15 mil for this. Let's do it, let's hop on it. And George is like, okay. And that's it. It hangs up the phone on his agent. That's all that you could tell, that's how the conversation. It was no, hey, let me send you the script. Do you like it? How do you feel about it? Do you feel like you can portray this character? Like it was nothing deep. It was just basically 10 to 15 million to play Batman. Okay, like that was it.
Yeah,
there was nothing else to it. Nothing else to it.
And what's interesting is that the only person that reprised their role—well, not the only person, but out of the main cast of characters—was Chris O'Donnell. Chris O'Donnell was the only one that actually reprised his role.
Yo,
yeah,
Lincoln. Great for you to join us. I asked the question before. Do you think? Well, we established that it wouldn't have made a difference, but do you think Val Kilmer should have reprised his role for Batman and Robin, or they should have cast somebody else, or should they have cast somebody else?
Both. I think he should have reprised his role, or they should have cast somebody else. I agree with both. But for some reason, I think George Clooney, he was just too campy, man. He just didn't fit Batman, bro. He just didn't, man. It's something like it's like Brandon Roth playing Superman. It just didn't work, bro.
That's another rough one.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to revisit Superman Returns because I didn't think Brandon Roth was that bad, but I'm gonna have to revisit it because I've only seen it once when it came out. So
it just it just didn't fit, man. But I could see why Val Kilmer didn't want to do part two. He wanted to do The Saint, which was a good film. But
Oh yes.
You know what I'm saying? So but yeah, man, like anybody else, man, shit, man. You know, Chris O'Donnell couldn't even help the fucking movie.
not even Chris O'Donnell, man.
He was the only one that was like fucking that still stayed the same part.
Right before you came back on, we were saying how because technically he's not the only one. Like Michael Goff, whatever is however you pronounce his name. He stood throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, all four movies. Yeah,
and Commissioner Gordon, the actor that Pat Hingle.
Yep.
Yeah, so he was in all of them, and
like that Commissioner Gordon.
He was okay. He got more lines as each film went on. It seems like as the quality of the movies dipped, it was like okay, we'll give you more lines as we know it's shit.
Right, but that's like. It's not Gordon though, man. He's just some fat guy, man. Gordon was active in the trenches. Like, I just didn't like Santa Claus, man. I didn't like him. That's not Commissioner Gordon at all.
Hey, thank God for Gary Oldman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, best one ever.
Yeah, for sure. They're gonna have a hard time. Listen, we're gonna talk about that on the next episode, but holy shit, the filmmaker who undertakes the Batman franchise going forward. They got their work cut out for them because Nolan just like he set a damn near impossible bar to top or even reach. I mean, you can always do different versions, obviously, but Nolan's Batman trilogy, what makes that so fucking memorable and why it had so much of a cultural impact, because it transcended the superhero genre.
Right.
Even people that don't care for Batman movies or superhero movies or comic book adaptations, they can sit there and say, these are really good films.
Right.
Yeah, man. I honestly don't think that it would be smart of the director who's doing the Batman. I think it's Matt Reeves, I believe, right? Or I'm not sure.
I don't know if Matt Reeves is still signed on to. He might be, I think.
I think it is Matt Reeves. I think Cody's right, but they're going to have to really go their own lane.
Yeah, I don't think it's wise to even try to mimic or even try to come close to doing what a Nolan did. It's best to just kind of put those movies aside and just do a reimagining of the film.
Yeah,
just don't even try that, because to a director, that's probably the worst thing you're going to do to yourself, because everyone's going to compare it and say it doesn't live up to it, and you didn't have your own vision. It's going to be a mess. So he's better off just doing something else.
Right. And what I heard about is that Deathstroke is going to be the main villain.
Oh. So yeah, there you go. I'd like to see different villains that we haven't seen. I don't want to see another iteration of Joker or Penguin. Maybe Penguin, because it's been a while, but. I don't want to see Two-Face again. I don't want to see Joker again. I don't want to see Bane again. I want to see like some of the other villains. I'm on board. This is like the final point, but I'm on board with Robert Pattinson as the Batman. And I'm gonna tell you why, because I've been defending Robert Pattinson since they first fucking announced it. There are a lot of people, including you, Lincoln. I'm looking at you. A lot of people are like, oh man, the Twilight guy, the guy that played Edward from the Twilight, the vampire. Really, listen, that was young Robert Pattinson who was starting to make a name for himself in Hollywood. If you've seen any of his recent work in the last 3 or 4 years, this guy is a really good actor. Like, he's actually a really fucking solid actor. No, I'm saying you love because you're thinking of Twilight. That's what I'm saying. You're thinking of Twilight, Robert Pattinson. But if you've seen films like Good Time, Most recently, High Life. Like, yo, he's solid, man. He's fucking solid.
I don't want my Batman with gleamy, glistening white skin. I'm sorry.
No, see, there you go. There you go. You're just being ignorant, bro.
Bro,
go and check out his films. Bro, I'm telling you.
He better go to tanning, man. Okay, the motherfucker is pale as Elmer's glue. Okay, from where he's from in Europe. Okay, he's pale as shit. All right, Batman ain't that white. Okay, he's gonna look like a bat pirate, man. Come on, man.
Listen, man.
Nah, they'll fix that. They'll fix that. What do you think, Keyote?
I wasn't on board 100% with this. With Robert Pattinson, not because of his glistening skin, but more so because I just didn't think he had a look.
Right.
But if I'm thinking to myself that this director is going to really reimagine Batman, then I'm open to it. If he's going to do something with Bruce Wayne that we've probably seen or haven't seen yet, and it's dope and it fits Pattinson. Then I'm with it. It's just the look wise. I just didn't get it. I didn't at first get it. But I'm open. I'm open.
Carl Urban should have been Batman.
Carl Urban would have made a good Batman, I guess. But you know what? Robert Pattinson is going to be perfect. And watch, you guys are going to see in a couple years when the movie comes out.
Shut your ass up, Louis.
Listen, he's going to be perfect for this time period because he's going to be like. Around the same age range as Christian Bale was when he did Batman Begins. And that's what they're looking for. They're looking for somebody in their early to mid 30s. They're not looking for, the old man, gruffy, worn down Batman that Ben Affleck played. And they're not looking for like the middle-aged bachelor that George Clooney was supposed to portray. They're looking for Batman in his prime, you know? And, hey, listen, maybe there are other candidates, but I'm telling you, I think he's going to be good.
I'm going to say this.
This is me based off of his recent dramatic performances. Like he has become somewhat of a method actor.
I see that. Okay. I haven't watched.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You think I like the Twilight movies? I could care less about the Twilight movies. I don't give a fuck about the Twilight movies.
I'm going to say this, you know, in 89 they doubted Michael Keaton.
Exactly.
In 2008, they doubted Heath Ledger. They said, oh, that's the guy from 10 Things I Hate About You. So
Exactly.
I'm going to give the vampire a chance. I'm going to give him a chance. But if he fucks up Batman, he's done for. He's done so.
Nah, he ain't going to fuck it up because they already have a trilogy plan.
If he thinks Christian Stewart broke his heart, then when I break his face,
Wait till the fans start to destroy him for now this next coming of a horrible series that we're gonna sit through. But I honestly I'm gonna give this film. Listen, as a Batman fan, and he's my favorite superhero, I'm gonna give this film the benefit of the doubt. So I'm in for it. I'm gonna support my boy Robert as soon as the first one comes out, Lewis. And if it bombs, I'm gonna pull the tape of this conversation right now, and I'm gonna say, Lewis, Lincoln was right. You oversold this film, and now I can't watch this anymore. I can't watch.
Hey, listen, if it turns out to be a critical and commercial success, you guys owe me a copy, a 4K copy of it, and I want it in the mail.
Okay. You got it. Listen, you got it.
Hey, look, this audio is gonna exist forever. Yeah, so we'll go back to it. And yeah, you remember when we talked all that shit?
Yeah, listen, I'm with it. If it's a critical and commercial success, yeah, then I'm sending you that 4K digital copy.
I don't make bets unless I'm sure about it, and I'm pretty sure that this movie gonna fucking suck. So.
Wow, man.
Wow. Damn, you suck, man. You fucking suck.
Bro, you fucking suck, bro.
Listen, this is Matt Reeves. Matt Reeves did a hell of a job with the Planet of the Apes trilogy. This Planet of the Apes trilogy is like fucking amazing.
Okay? This ain't Planet of the Apes. This is Batman, okay? Anybody can make
sense. But what I'm saying is he's more than capable of directing and having a good vision.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? This isn't a Joel Schumacher type of situation.
Yeah, man. We'll just see, man.
Well, we shall see indeed. But in any case, that wraps up the Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher portion of the Batman conversation. Tune in, listeners, to the next episode. We're going to be strictly focusing on Christopher Nolan's Batman Dark Knight trilogy. That's Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises, and how it's impacted the modern day superhero film. So, with that said, thank you both for coming on, and we'll link up again for the next episode.
It's been a pleasure, fellas.
All right, man. Peace.
Later, man.